So, now we've got that out of the way, we can start doing some meditation. But before we do the meditation, we have to teach people how to meditate. And even some of you, coming for 30 years, still need to learn a little bit more about how to make the mind nice and peaceful. And you don't get the mind peaceful by doing hard work. That just tires you out. How many times have you heard this one now?
Twice.
Oh, come on. You must have dementia. Check for dementia, because I... That is always why I like teaching older people. I can tell the same old jokes every week, and they laugh every week. They forget I told it last time. But anyway, this is especially for those in the back who are coming for the first time. Now, meditation is all about allowing your mind to become nice and still, so it can rest and build up some energy. It's all about making it still. So, this is a simile I use, the glass of water. I am now going to hold this glass of water perfectly still. Now, Rachel, you're sitting in the front. My husband, is she an honest woman?
Yes.
Very good, yes. You have to always consider before you answer. That's very wise, especially when you're married. Consider first. Then, okay. Now, Rachel, is this water still?
No.
It's not. Why? Because I'm not being mindful. I'm paying no attention to it, so I'll now be mindful. I'm mindful. Has it stopped moving yet?
No.
Because I'm not concentrating. I will now be mindful and I will concentrate.
No.
It actually moves more. Every time I concentrate, it moves more. So how can I get this water to be perfectly still? Put it down, let it go. Don't grasp, relax. And I put the water down. I have to depend upon honest Rachel. Because if I said, you know, you maybe just wouldn't believe me. Is it still moving?
It's getting better though.
Yeah, give it a few more seconds. And please don't breathe. Keep on spoiling. Ah! Now that's pretty good.
That's calm.
That's peaceful, that's still. And how did I do that? Simple. Let it go, stop doing stuff. So meditation is not another exercise you have to do, like yoga, like Tai Chi, like exercise. My theory is you've only got a certain amount of energy given to you when you're born, and if you waste it all exercising, you'll have none left in the later years of your life. So I'm preserving my energy. I've got a long time. I know that that's not the common way of saying things, but anyway, that is how we meditate. Learning how to relax and stop doing stuff. So meditation is not something you do. It's what happens when you stop doing things. You just relax and let it be. Such a simple thing to do. So, first of all, you look at your body. Oh no, just how many times been exercising it, walking it, washing it, scratching it. So much stuff we have to do to this body. It never leaves us alone. So what do? We just look at our body and just leave it alone. Let it relax by itself. Put it down. Don't worry about it. Those of you who are sick, my teacher's favorite saying was, don't worry if you're sick. You'll either get better or you'll die. Either way, sickness never lasts. You can't argue with that, can you? And also, if you worry about it, the worry is what kills you, much more than the sickness. So that's why we'll just leave it alone. Then you find that everything becomes relaxed, and even your health improves. Just on health, I always remember the one old fellow, he used to live up in Rolling Stone, and now he was an English man from Lancashire, and he'd been smoking much of his life, because in those days that's what people did, and they didn't realise it was bad for your health. So anyway, he eventually got lung cancer, and I went to see him at the hospice in Murdoch. And the first time I saw him over there, just now, doctor's given up on him, he's about to die, and he told me this place is wonderful, because the very first night there, the nurse said, "What do you want to have for dinner?" And he said, "Well, I've got diabetes, so it can't be anything sugary or sweet. I've got high cholesterol, so I can't have anything oily. I've got hard blood vessels, so forget about salt." And the nurse looked at him and said, "What on earth are you talking about, Ted?" That was his name, Ted. "You're not going to die of cholesterol. You're not going to die of diabetes. You're not going to die of a heart attack. The cancer's going to kill you in about a week. So you can eat whatever you want." And he said, "Really?" "Yeah." And that was the first time in about 3 or 4 years he could eat what he liked. It didn't matter anymore. He was going to die anyway. And so he had all his favourite foods. Oily, sugary, as much salt as he liked. All that stuff which his wife said you couldn't eat for years. And he enjoyed himself so much, and this is an absolutely true story, after about a week he didn't die. He just left the hospice, he'd recovered. 6 months later he died properly, but he had, you know, at least another 6 months. Because it's not just physical stuff, it's learning how to relax and be at peace and enjoy. Otherwise we get so tense and miserable, you know, who wants to live like that? So this is what we learn to do in meditation, just to leave it alone, relax, no tension. And then when our body relaxes, it's amazing just how healthy it gets. And also, not just healthy, how free it feels. And how you can just sleep well at night. Isn't that wonderful if you can learn how to sleep well at night? Maybe I'll tell this joke. Can I tell a joke? I just remembered this, I've got a new joke book, so you've got a lot of jokes coming in the next few weeks. But a lot of them I can't tell. They're a bit sort of on the edge. This one is sort of on the edge. The guy checks into a hotel, and he said, "Well, we're pretty full up, sort of, but no, we can put you off if you don't mind sharing a room." He said, "Oh, I don't mind sharing a room." And he said, "But, you know, the guy you're going to share the room with, it's not separate beds, the guy you share a room with snores really loud, that's why no one wants to stay with him." He said, "No worries at all." And in the morning, he comes down for breakfast. He said, "How'd you go?" He said, "I had a beautiful night's sleep. Fast asleep." "What about the snoring?" "The guy never snored at all." "How come?" He said, "Well, as soon as I, just before I went to bed, I leant over and I kissed him and then I went to sleep. He was awake all night." You haven't heard that one before, have you? No, it's a bit on the edge, I do apologise. But anyway, it works. So anyway, just learning how to relax, have a bit of fun. You can sleep well, you don't have to go up to tricks like that. And also you can actually have a very healthy body. But also you can learn how to relax the mind. What's the point of having a healthy body when your mind's all over the place, worrying about this, remembering that? So we learn how just to relax the mind as well. In other words, how can you relax the mind when you're so busy? What are you busy with in your head? We're busy remembering 30 years ago when you first came here. Remembering what happened last week. Remember what happened today. So much stuff happened to you. But you can't do anything about it. It's gone. And you still... Now, how old are you guys now, girls? And you still do homework? Homework is what you get after school. So this is remembering the past is like doing homework. School's finished, and you still have to work. The past is finished. It's done. So, don't do any homework. Whatever is finished is done. Complete. Cannot be changed. Good or bad, you can't change it. And I always say, if it's really good, which happened to you, celebrate it. If it's really bad, blame somebody else. That's what I do. So during this session here, if you like it, you think it's a really good session, great meditation teachings, you come and praise me. Any complaints, anything wrong, Rachel is the leader. It's not my fault. So I always have someone to blame. So anyway, that way I don't keep any sort of rubbish stuff. Why would you keep rubbish stuff? Because keeping rubbish stuff is like the person who goes to the toilet and they wipe their backside and they get a bit of brown on it. How many of you who really want to look after the planet, who don't want to waste stuff, who want to conserve paper because it comes from trees? How many of you recycle the toilet paper by folding it up and put it in your pocket and waiting for next night? Or is it the case you just, at the very least, just tear it off the bit which is brown and put it in there, keep the rest in your pocket? Do you do that? Why not, you environmental vandals? You're destroying the planet. You're not leaving anything left for the kids. So, what we should... No one does that, do they? A slight bit of brown on the toilet paper and it goes straight in the bowl and you flush it away. But, a slight piece of suffering in your past and you keep it. That's what you do. Keep it and keep it and keep it. What's that? Really stupid. So, what we do is learn how to let go of the past. There were the two chicken farmers story. This is one of our judges. You remember this. Your memory's improving. Well done. Now, this is my teacher's story. And I say exactly as he does. It's like the rude word, you know, the shit word. But, you know, that's, you hear that sort of in school playgrounds, I'm sure. So, don't think the kids don't know what that means. So, there were two chicken farmers. One chicken farmer went into the chicken yard to collect the produce of the night before. So he went in the yard and he collected the eggs, went back into the kitchen, made a nice omelette for his family, and he sold the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That's what we call a smart chicken farmer. That's what a chicken farmer should do. Chicken farmer number two, you know, was a bit short of what we call it, a little bit short of one or two robes to make a real monk. And he, you can always chase his stuff around. So anyway, he, short of a few suitors to make a full Tripitaka. That's what we say in the monastery. But then, so he went in there with a basket. And he filled the basket full of chicken shit, the little pellets. And he brought the chicken shit back into the house, where it made a huge pong, and the family weren't very impressed at all. Now, the meaning of that story, this is very deep, be careful. What type of chicken farmer are you? When you go into the past, to collect all the things which have happened to you the last week. What do you put in your basket and bring home with you? You're shit collectors, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes, you are. I know you are. All the rotten stuff which happened, that's what you collect. And all the nice stuff which has happened to you today, you leave in the past to rot. So, in life, do not be a shit collector. Be an egg collector, okay? The nice stuff, unless you leave it to rot in the past. So, that's how we learn how to let go of the past. The good stuff in the past is easy to let go of, but it's the smelly, stinky stuff, the filthy stuff, that's what we find hard to let go of. Why do we do that? We just torture ourselves. We just stop ourselves being peaceful and happy or being free, so we let it go. As soon as you realise what it is you're holding on to, this dirty stuff, it's not helpful. It is just like using a piece of toilet paper and putting it in your pocket and keeping it. That's what it's really like. It doesn't belong in your memory. Throw it out. Then the future. Oh, I never thought I would end up here on a Tuesday night teaching a group of people from Armadale. Oh, I thought I'd be up in a mountain somewhere, peaceful, just communing with the universe, not having to do anything. I didn't join up to be a monk to teach so and go all over the world. I never read my contract, that's the problem. But you make use of what you've got. But isn't it the case that your future, it never turned out the way you expected? Mine didn't anyway. Same as yours. The future, by definition, can never ever be predicted. It's what you don't expect. That is the future. A series of unanticipated, unexpected events. So you've got the background already. You should know by now that your future tomorrow, you don't know what's going to happen. And whatever you're afraid of, I keep on saying, whatever you're afraid of happening, it never happens. Never happens. It's usually something much worse. True, isn't it? But why worry about it? And indeed, why worry about it? People keep telling me you have to make plans. If you don't make plans, you're late for somewhere, you forget things. If you don't make plans, things go wrong. That's true. But I found if you do make plans, they go wrong anyway. Either way they go wrong. So I decided a long time ago not to make plans and enjoy myself before it goes wrong. That's wise. In other words, have a little bit of happiness and peace in life, rather than always worrying about the future. And I said this, for the last 10 years here, where is your future made? Right here, right now. This is where your future is being made. Right now is the only time you can ever do anything about your future. So if you do really want to be happy and healthy and wise and kind, don't put it off until 5 minutes from now. Now. It's the only time you have. So, when you realize now is where my future is being made, if you care about your future, if your future is important to you, your health and happiness, stop worrying about a few minutes from now or tomorrow. Put all of your attention in the place where the future is being made right now. And that means you're just here. And you know, the present moment right here is a pretty cool place to hang out. The future is fantasy. It's unreal. It never happens. The past is a total waste of time. And those people who keep saying, no, you learn from the past. You do not learn from the past. Otherwise, all historians will be the wisest people in the world. And they ain't. The only place you learn from is the present. This is where you learn. this is where the action is. Now. So, give this present moment more importance, more value. Now, how to meditate. Once you let go of the past, let go of the future. It's called mindfulness, but I'm going to give another little spin on mindfulness for those people who have been coming here for 30 years and are getting pretty bored, same old, same old. And this was based on the Emperor's Three Questions story. The Emperor's Three Questions story, Tolstoy, nothing really to do with religion, because this story, the Emperor was fed up with religion, always arguing with other people. People sometimes ask me, is Buddhism a religion? And I say, for tax purposes only. And I get into trouble for that. But most things. So, really fed up, like many people, had it with religions, always fighting with each other. So, he said, let's make my own religion. I'm an emperor. So, what religion do I really need? And he found out that you only need the answers to three questions. If you get those answers, you have all the religion, all the spirituality, all the philosophy, but practical stuff you ever need. And the Emperor's three questions was, when is the most important time? Who is the most important person? And what is the most important thing to do? Now, I just want to rush through here because I'm supposed to be talking about meditation, but many of you have heard that story before. When is the most important time?
Now.
Yeah.
Who is the most important person?
Here you are.
No.
Are you in?
Not yours and you're
in.
Yeah.
Yourself.
It's not yourself. No. You haven't heard this before. My goodness. Okay, I'm just going to go. It's not yourself. That's so selfish. Of course, right here, the most important person is Ajahn Brahm, isn't it? No, it's not either. Look, that's what I always thought, that yourself is the most important person, but that would have just been ordinary. And when I first read this, I was only a student, 18 or 19 years of age, and wow, this was really just opened up another avenue of wisdom for me, and living a really good life. The most important person is the one right in front of you, whoever that happens to be. Yeah, exactly, yeah, because you've heard it before, I read the book.
That's right.
Cheating.
Yeah, you need to sign it at the end
of this. Yeah, okay, but it's true, because what it means, this happened to me many times. You know, talking to some big shot, you know, some professor at university when I was a student, and he wasn't listening to me. He was trying to get rid of me. I was not important enough. And that just, I always remember that, was just so awful feeling that someone is not treating you with respect. And I know what it's like when someone's looking at you and you're not important to them. It may be, you know, your partner in life, because they're too busy, or you're too busy for your kids. Kids come up, mummy, 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 later, later, I'm getting ready to go to Armidale. In other words, they're not important. So I've tried my hardest, you know, over the last, I don't know how many years since then, whoever's in front of me, don't care who they are, they're the most important person in the world, Mike. Right now you're the most important person in the world to me. But not anymore. But what that does is you connect whatever's in front of you, the person, they are important, whoever they are. Doesn't matter if you're busy, doesn't matter if you're a big shot and they're just some tea lady or something, I don't know, but they're important. And just, that is what we mean by mindfulness. You're right here, whoever's in front of you, whatever's in front of you, now the only time, that is important, which means you connect with this moment. You're not trying to get rid of somebody to get somewhere else which is you think is more important. This moment is the most important one in your life. Whoever's in this moment is the most important. And the last point was, the most important thing is to care. To get the idea of what caring is, one of the old doctors, he was about to resign because after so many years of being a doctor, his first patient died. It's a 23-year-old girl, and now, even though he was not at fault at all, the doctor, but it was unexpected, the death, and he felt so guilty, especially when he had to go up to the husband and tell the guy, you know, just married, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years, say, you know, the love of your life, you know, the person you chose is no more, she's dead. And even worse, your 2 children have got no mum. Well, no, it's just so hard for him to say that. It's just so painful. I don't know, because I never had to do that. Imagine having to say that and see just the grief and the shock. And he felt responsible. So he said, I can't do that anymore. I've got to give up, get another career. And that's when I told him, look, if you think curing is going to be the purpose of your life as a doctor, you're going to go through this many times. Because you can't always cure people. You're always going to fail from time to time. But I said, that's not the purpose of being a doctor. The purpose of being a doctor is not to cure someone. It's to care for them. To care for them. It doesn't matter what disease they are, how advanced their sickness is. You can always care. You never need to fail if you make caring the most important. So it's to care, not to cure. And that's the most important thing to do in the Emperor's Three Questions. You're not trying to cure your husband. If you try that, it's endless. You can't do it. Husbands cannot be cured. Same with wives. Yeah, he nods there, yes, certainly. You can't cure your wife and change her. But you can always care for them. That is what makes a marriage. Not trying to cure them, but to care for them. Same with doctors. You can always care, but you can't always cure. And he got it straight away. Went back to work. Very successful guy now. And he's curing more patients by making caring more important. So you can understand the psychology. So what's that got to do with meditation? So simple. You close your eyes. Now's the most important time. Forget about what happened a few moments ago. Forget about how many minutes we've got, because I'm starting late. What's the most important thing to meditate on? Whatever's in front of your awareness right now. Whatever. Sleepy, you're restless, you're upset, whatever it is, it's there to teach you something. So give it importance. Whatever's in front of me right now, even if you're in pain, it's important. Please give it importance. Don't try and get rid of it and get somewhere else. You spend a whole life trying to get rid of stuff instead of just giving it importance and learning from it. And the only thing to do is to care for it. If you care for this moment, yeah, that's actually where it starts to improve and get so peaceful and so nice, when you care for stuff. So that is Emperor's Three Questions meditation. Now is the most important time, any time you have. Whatever you're aware of right now, it's the most important thing in the whole world. So be aware of it. Now and importance, that is mindfulness. You're fully aware. You're fully with this moment instead of trying to get rid of it. And just care with it. Give it some softness, some kindness. So if you close your eyes and you're with yourself, you are actually important. Don't try and cure yourself, no matter what you think is wrong with you. As far as I'm concerned, there's nothing wrong with you at all. Bring you into trouble with psychologists, doctors, always trying to cure you. Always saying you're not good enough, you're not healthy enough, you're not sane enough. Who said? So trying to get more sane is what makes you crazy. Trying to get better is what makes you sick. So just be. You're good enough. If you can do that, now's the most important time. The one you're with, with your eyes closed, yourself. You're good enough. Just care for yourself, that's all. Don't try to improve. Don't try and cure. That's called putting down the glass. Letting it be. The meditation becomes the easiest thing in the whole world. When you're not trying to achieve anything, then you can't fail. Okay, there we go. So a little bit of extra. We're good. I started a bit late, because when I start talking I can't stop. And so we're going to do a bit of meditation. So those of you, before you go, let's stretch. Whoa! Come on, get up. Move your arms around. Wiggle, stretch, stretch. Oh my goodness. You don't like getting up? Okay. Make sure you don't put the person in front of you. We've got no insurance. And when you're ready, okay. You're going to go down on the ground or me? Okay, that's my spot. Thank you so much. When you're ready, lower your backside. Okay. So, basic meditation instruction, sit down, close your eyes and shut up. Very good. So close your eyes, and before we get into the deep stuff, the simple stuff, just please put some attention on your body. How's your body going? Is it comfortable? Now, one thing with mindfulness, you need to sometimes arouse mindfulness, generate it. Sometimes people, what the heck is this? So, and I'll demonstrate for you. Ask your legs, how are you feeling? You'll get an answer. You're mindful of your legs. You can feel them. If they need to be moved and adjusted, for goodness sake, please do so. Adjust, move. Bottom, how are you? Are you comfortable sitting on the chair? Do you need a cushion? You're too high, you're too low? How do you feel? Asking a question is a great way of connecting, of starting and generating this thing called awareness here of your body. Back, how are you doing? Now when I ask that question, I just want to stretch my back. You see animals, kangaroos, they do that. You see the dogs and the cats having a good stretch. It just really relaxes things afterwards when you let go. So I'm aware of my back, and I find the most comfortable position. Sometimes I move it the left or right, back and forth, until I can find the optimum position. This is all about preparation, and also developing some initial awareness. And then I ask my arms and hands, how are you guys down there? Can you feel the best position for your arms and hands? Once they're settled, my head on top of my neck, make sure it's not too far forward, not too far back, not to the left, not to the right. Head, how do you feel? So my awareness is on my body, feeling it. Until there's no way I can improve my bodily posture, this position, through movement. Got it the best I possibly can. Can't always be perfect, but pretty good. And the next thing I do, anyone who has sicknesses, especially cancers and heart diseases or whatever, I'd now like to go inside my body. I ask, is there any part of my body which is painful, irritating, even a word I use like unbalanced, is something really not quite right there? I can't really describe the feeling, but there's part of my body which needs some attention. And I can feel right now there's some indigestion in the bottom of my bowels. So I'm going to put my attention down there. But please, you may have an ache in the back, some angina, some tummy ache, or some headache, wherever that is, zoom in on that feeling. Zoom in on it. So you focus down until that feeling is all you're aware of, as best you can. So now I'm zooming in on my bowels. I get to know that feeling. Can't even put a word to it. There's a feeling down there, it's a little irritating. And once I'm aware of a sensation in my body, just a small part of my body, that gives me the power to actually to ease it, to relax it. So I look at that feeling and then I experiment, trial and error, with your mind. Let it be. Be kind to it. Don't be afraid. Open the door of your heart to that feeling. Embrace it. All those types of words are usually accompanied by the feeling getting less irritating. I get feedback. And I continue on that kindness, letting it be, relaxing it. Every time I do the right mental intention, that feeling, that pain gets less and less and less. That's how I heal my own body. The mindfulness always gives me feedback. And I play around, trial and error until I get it right, how to relax things. So already I feel that irritation, already getting less. I've been doing this for years. I just feel that part of the body, mindful of that feeling, and I play with it until I know how to ease it, relax it, just by not being afraid, not controlling, letting it be, being kind. And you feel the sensation change. The hardness of the irritation is disappearing, it's getting soft. Very close to disappearing. Remember, I've been doing this a long time, but you should be able to see some effect on the one part of your body, how to relax it. But just focus on a small part of the body, not all the body. One little part at a time, whether there's an ache or a pain, a tumour, a wound. You can feel everything start balancing. Irritations getting less, even vanishing. Pain softening. The sharpness becoming blunt and then dulling until it vanishes. And usually my body becomes so relaxed, so at ease. If I see any tension anywhere, just focus on it and just relax it to the max. Takes a bit of repeated exercise, but eventually you get the hang of it. Being aware of a small part of the body and relaxing it until the irritation, the pain, the wound heals up. Really focusing. you're also right here, right now, with your body, giving it importance, caring for it. Now the most important time, the thing right in front of you, which this time you've chosen, your body, and caring for it, not trying to cure it, caring. It's powerful. Once your body is comfortable as you can get it, now turn to your emotional world, the mind. And I usually ask meditators, how peaceful are you, or how agitated is your mind? Give it a number from 1 to 10. Peaceful means 1, agitated is 10. How peaceful are you? From 1 to 10. This is just a trick, a means, to get you to be aware of how peaceful or how agitated you are. What I call mindful of the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? Once you're aware of this thing I call peaceometer, that which tells you how you can give a number from 1 to 10. Once you're mindful of it, see what makes that needle, the piezometer, go further up, 7, 8, 9. What brings it down? 4, 3, 2, 1. What attitude of mind makes you more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? Mindfulness allows you to get feedback. And you soon find controlling, doing stuff moves the needle up. It agitates you. Remembering the past, worrying about the future, disturbs you. Just being. Letting it be, putting down the glass, moves that needle closer and closer to one, to peace. Let it be. What also moves the needle down, more and more peaceful, is if you remember, now is the only time you ever have. This is where your future is made. Stay in this moment. Whatever this moment is, it's the most important thing in the whole world. Now is the most important time. Whatever you're aware of, the most important thing. And your job, your only job, is not to cure this moment, but to care for it. Care for this moment. And it will develop by itself. Peace will come to you, rather than you chasing peace. What are you aware of right now? Just care for it, that's all. Give this moment kindness, gentleness, respect, just to watch how peaceful you become. Now, most important time. This, whatever it is right now, most important. Just be kind. Whenever you need to move during the meditation, please do so. You don't need to torture yourself. Fidget this way, but just do it carefully. And then sit still again. Watching this moment, being kind to it, not trying to achieve anything or get rid of anything, just be it. Now, most important time. This, whatever it is, what are you aware of right now? It's most important. Just care for it. Some meditators like watching their breathing. It's fine. Just watch the breath as it comes in, watch as it goes out. breathing in peace, thinking our peace, visualizing peace with every in-breath, letting go with every out-breath, breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. I'm going to be quiet now for the next 10 minutes until the meditation ends, maybe about 7 minutes. No future, no past, just now.
getting very close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What's the reading on your peaceometer? How peaceful are you? Also, what does peace feel like? See if you can notice the joy, the freedom of just being content in this moment, and how it makes the body so relaxed. You know this, you can feel it. This is great for the health. I'm going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to the sound of the gong. And only when the last ringing starts to vanish, only then open your eyes at the 3rd ringing of the gong. Chilled out. Do I have to work now?
No, you can stay there.
Okay. There we go. Okay, any questions? Damien. I suppose I should get up, shouldn't I? You're encouraging me to be lazy. Okay. I'll encourage you to be lazy too. Okay, now is question time. Are there any questions in the box? Okay. I've got one. Yeah, 3.
What is it Shambhala?
Who?
No, I
can't. The lion's roar.
Shambhala?
Yeah. What's that?
Oh, because there used to be this, it was a district of London many years ago called Shambles. And that's actually where they had like a funny farm for those mentally disturbed people. And that's why it's called, you know, this place is the Shambles.
So,
that's the only thing I know about that one anyway. Shambhala. No, they have all sorts of names. And that was a Sanskrit name. Doesn't really mean anything important. So you don't have to worry about that. In other words, I don't know. Not important. You got something else? Look it up in Wikipedia.
But not now.
Not now, okay, yeah. So, any other question? Yeah.
Have
one. Another one, yeah?
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Is it okay to fall asleep when you meditate?
Ah, that's a good...
Some people say don't fall asleep.
No.
That's great.
No.
So I have no idea.
No, if you're sleepy, fall asleep.
Okay.
Because this is our modern world, number one, we have sleep deficit, which means we don't sleep enough. And that also means that when you go to bed at night, you don't know how to sleep. So please, if you want to go to sleep at night, many people do this, it's very, very successful, they listen to one of my talks. And they fall fast asleep. I don't know why, I still haven't figured out whether that's a compliment or a complaint. Whatever, it works, so that's great. So, sometimes it just relaxes a person. So don't go and watch a horror movie before you go to sleep. That just really gets you uptight. And also that when you do lay in bed, you know, you get yourself nice and comfortable, and just, please for goodness sake, let go of all the past and future. Just like we taught here. Now's the most important time. Whatever you're with right now, this beautiful soft bed, just really get in some care for yourself in this moment. And if you do that, you go to sleep very easily. So what you're learning here is how to relax the body and mind. And it means, number one, you can really go to sleep very easily. And that's a huge thing. If that's all you ever learn from this place, what a great benefit that is. So many people don't know how to get a good night's sleep, which means that you wake up tired and grumpy. And, you know, sometimes you just wonder, you know, just why can't we learn from the people around us? Maybe not the people, but our animals, dogs. Do they ever wake up grumpy? Do they need a cup of coffee before you can speak to them? There's a lot of wisdom to be found with those. They just go and you know, they never feel guilty about having a nap and going to sleep. Human beings, I should be doing something. I've got all this stuff I need to do around the house, all the emails I need to answer, all the cleaning up I need to do. So, what am I saying? Before, when you go home tonight, don't just go washing up all the dishes. You've got to do some research first of all before you wash the dishes. Count how many dishes are clean. Count how many dishes are dirty, and if there's more clean ones than dirty ones, quit while you're ahead. Leave it in the morning. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. You're going to die one night anyway, so, you know, just might as well just, you know, hope it's tonight, then you don't have to do it tomorrow. I know some people hear that, the kids, and they say, well, I'm not going to do my homework, because that's what Bob says. So anyway, but it's true, because we're always so worried and so fearful, always have to get things done before we can relax. That's why we never have a good rest. So if you do go to sleep, at least you're actually letting go. That's a good sign. And there was the, you know, traditional Buddhists over there, that there is a teaching by the Buddha, the two monks. There was one monk, and he was sitting perfectly straight, hardly moving, back straight, chin tucked in, right thumb touching the left thumb, just breathing in, not moving. When the Buddha passed him, he said to his attendant, I'm worried about that guy. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, he disrobed and got married. And he saw another monk in the forest, and he was sitting, nodding this way and nodding that way, half asleep. And the Buddha smiled. Said, I'm not worried about him. A couple of weeks later, he was fully enlightened with lots of psychic powers as well. So just another couple of weeks. And yeah, exactly. Now, when I first saw that, I thought, what is going on here? That doesn't make any sense to me. But the first one was a control freak. He's holding his body tight, but just through force. You know, I'm not going to go to sleep. I'm going to be awake. How tiring does that get you? But does that make you feel at peace, relaxed, free? That kills you. The other monk was letting go. Just, okay, I'll fall asleep. Why? Because I'm tired. So he just fell asleep. Because what happens then? After a while, you repay your sleep deficit. So, and after a while, you just wake up. And the monk wakes up quite naturally. And then you're very peaceful and actually more alert than usual. So, we don't sleep enough, unfortunately. That's why, you know, I went to Google headquarters a couple of years ago. They have sleep pods. Yeah, there's little capsules. You can close them up. They're soundproof, really comfortable, so you can just go and take a nap at any time of the day or night. So, great to have those in your offices. And just put your boss in there and lock it. Yeah. And oh, what a peaceful place that will be. But that's for people any work and go in there and take a nap. And it works. Number one, people are healthier, they're more productive, they work much better. Because when you're really tired, you know, you're really a pain in the butt for everybody. So, and and this is so obvious, anybody in psychology and medicine knows that one of the biggest diseases is tiredness. Many other things come from that: heart disease, cancer, and mental diseases, just from just basically you're worn out,
you're tired.
So please, if you sort of go to sleep during the meditation, you're most allowed. Just next time, bring your pillow. bring the whole bed. You know, sometimes we have these retreats over at, so we've got a retreat centre. Many of you have been down there. When was the next time we're going to have a Armadale retreat down there? You had one last year, didn't you?
Yeah, we haven't organised one.
Yeah. Because beautiful retreat centre, just the Armadale people just go there for a weekend.
Quite a few are going on Kemmerbarra's.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In
the fortnight? Yeah, we're just totally Armadale.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? So anyway, all your friends, we have this beautiful retreat centre, and for the first couple of days, if it's a long retreat, everyone sleeps. They catch up. They usually sleep until breakfast, and they have a nice breakfast, and they go and take a nap after breakfast. And they get up for lunch and take a nap after lunch, and then in the afternoon they may be able to go for a little walk or something, have a cup of tea in the evening. But wouldn't that be bliss? Just to catch up on your sleep, and you become so much healthier and happier and energized, and again less marital problems, less physical problems, less everything problems. That's so important, especially for politicians, to put them to sleep just for a couple of hours, because we're just so tired, we're so tense and tired. That's one of the biggest problems we have. Exactly. Couldn't put it better myself. So yeah, no problem at all if you fall asleep.
That's what you should have, a politician's retreat.
Yeah.
Get all the follies out there.
Yeah. Okay, now they'd be arguing, it'd be so noisy down there. Anyway, another question.
Can I ask, you were saying that when you have thoughts going through your mind, are you accepting them and understanding them? Don't try and fight them off?
Don't fight them off, but don't indulge in them either. So the trouble is, people don't know the difference between letting them be and keeping them going. Round and round and round and round. And so what I ask everybody to do is get some distance between you and your thinking. Like stand back, stand outside of the thoughts, if you can. Imagine that. The thoughts are on a screen and you're apart from those thoughts, like looking through a window. You're standing outside, but you're looking inside. And if you want to know what I mean, probably I said this the last time I was here, it's a simile of watching a movie. I'm getting old now. When I was young, that's only about a year or two ago when I was young. No, when I was really young, I used to go out with your girlfriends. I remember this time, a group of my friends, we took our girlfriends to the movies and all go together. And we saw a movie, this shows how old I am, West Side Story. Remember West Side Story?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Romeo and Juliet set in the west side of New York, like an ill-fated lovers, Tony and Maria. And both, one was in Puerto Rican, one was Italian migrants. And even though really good people and they fell in love and they tried their very best, but you know, there's always complications with families. Now, just because, you know, I think it was Tony shot Maria's brother, that doesn't mean they shouldn't get on together. Or something. So Maria's other brother was out to kill Tony or something. Always gets complicated. And Maria was running through the streets of New York in the middle of the night, trying to warn the love of her life, Tony, be careful, my brother's going to kill you. And finally she saw Tony under one of the lampposts. It was raining, of course, dark, very miserable, just the light of the lamppost. And then she said, Tony, Tony, to warn him. And at that moment a shot rang out. The brother had also found him and shot Tony. And Maria ran to the love of her life, held her in her arms as he was dying. And even though it was New York in the middle of the night, somewhere there was an orchestra. And they started playing. There's a place for us. Somewhere, a place for us. And all our girlfriends burst out crying, they were weeping, and all our guys were laughing. What are you crying for? It's only a movie. And I always tell the girlfriends, look, they knew I was a Buddhist, look, if you don't believe in reincarnation now, wait for another half an hour and Tony gets reincarnated in the next showing of the movie. But okay, that's putting down girls. They get really involved in the movies, but watch guys. Where Free Mantle are playing the West Coast Eagles. That was not a mark! He was offside! Like, I've seen this over in the movies, not the movies, when I go travelling. Because I use Singapore as like a hub. I always go here, there, from that place. And there's a Terminal 3. There's a big screen. They're always playing soccer on the screen. And I see these guys. You know, they're standing up shouting at the screen. That was not a goal! They shout at that. And I just burst out laughing. These are guys, okay? That is being played in Manchester. It does not matter how loud you shout in Singapore. They will not hear you in Manchester. That doesn't stop a person shouting. And anyway, it's a replay anyway, so. But, why do people do that? Why do you do that? We get actually dragged into the action, to the screen, to the football, the sport. We get right involved. And if you actually could check at the time, the people in Singapore shouting at that football match, they actually believe that he's in the stadium at that time. They get dragged in. That's the psychology. They don't realise that. They forget they're in Singapore. They think they're in Old Trafford Stadium in Manchester. You think you're actually in the West Side. And that's, you know, that's your friends. It drags you in, pulls you in. You get entangled. And that's exactly what happens with thoughts and fantasies. Which we have. We have thoughts. They say the plans, they never work out. It's just like fantasies, it's not real. We get dragged into it. And if it's like planning, it gives us some control. We think we can plan and get this and get that. And it's the same with like our past. You know, it's amazing. Just ask any psychologist what you think happened. Probably never did happen. Much of our past is actually created. It's more true to what we want to have happened than to what actually did happen. That's one of the reasons why people argue about what happened. So, the past actually, any psychologist, research after research after research, has proved it's untrustworthy. But you think it's... I was there at the time. I remember first reading this, policemen, traffic police, when they go to an accident, and they ask eyewitnesses what happened. And two eyewitnesses, same people, I saw it, and they give totally different accounts of what actually happened. Because, you know, we had certain memories, but we actually fill in the details of what should have happened, what fits our narrative. So that's why memories are very, very dangerous. We can't really get the past back. So that's why we get involved in it, because actually we can mess around with it and make it exactly the way we want to. We get entangled. So just stand back. It's a waste of time. So when you can stand back, you disengage from it, then it doesn't pull you in anymore. It's easy to let go then. So what you think happened, probably never did. But it appears like it did. You can't distinguish the fact from memory. It keeps deluding us. So, don't worry about what your husband didn't do yesterday. Maybe he did do it. Part is upset. Leave it alone. It's a waste of time destroying the present, this beautiful moment called now, over something which is uncertain in the past. He said this. No, you said that. No, you said something else. It's a total waste of time. That is why I just comes up again. One of my jobs is to do marriage blessings. And one of the stories I always tell, which many of you have heard many times before, is this wonderful couple. They were having a walk in the park in Armidale just after lunch, and they heard a sound. Quack, quack. Quack, quack. And straight away the wife said, "Darling, can you hear that chicken?" And he said, "What do you say? That's a chicken," said the wife. He said, "No, no, 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 no. That's a duck. It went quack, quack. Everybody knows it must be a duck because it went quack, quack." "No," she said, "it's a chicken." He said, "It can't be. It's a duck." She said, "No, it's a chicken." He said, "It's a duck." She said, "No, it's a chicken." He said, "It's a duck. D-U-C-K. Duck."
Sorry, did I spit at you with saying duck?
She said, "No, it's a chicken." And she started to cry. And then he finally remembered why he married her. He squeezed her hand very gently, looked into her eyes, about to burst into tears, and said, "Darling, I think you may be right. That is a chicken." And she squeezed his hand gently and said, "Thank you, darling." And that night he got a hot dinner. Guys, it ain't worth sacrificing a hot dinner. I mean, whether it's a bloody chicken or a duck, who cares? If she said it's a cow, it's a cow. If he said it's a horse, it's a horse. Whack, whack. So the moral of that story is priorities. What's most important in life? Arguments is not so important. It's like being in harmony together. And also, just because it goes quack, quack, does not mean it has to be a duck. Because it could be a chicken from Fukushima nuclear disaster zone, mutated. It sounded like a duck, yeah. That's happened. So we always think we're right, and sometimes we find we just misunderstood it. We got it wrong. So it's not worth arguing. So that's why the past as well. I don't care what happened in the past, because we've both got different ideas. What happened, so just let it go. It's not worth an argument. So there we go, chickens and ducks. Then that actually works, that story.
Good.
Yeah, about 6 months after I married a couple of people, they
got married.
Well, of course, I've married so many women in my life. And so many men as well. So anyway, this couple, I did the blessing for them, and they came. They were helping out with a fundraiser in our temple in Perth. And she came up to me and said, "I'm here to really help you out all day, because you saved my marriage." So how did I do that? He said, "That story, chicken and duck." Because after a few months of marriage, she got very fed up that her husband never contributed. Every time they had a decision to make, she said, "We should do this, we should do that." He would just say, "Okay, darling, okay, darling." And that really frustrated her. And so she confronted him one day. She said, "Why don't you sort of contribute and, you know, let me give your ideas of these things?" He'd just sit there and always agree with me. Frustrating. It's amazing. It's just beautiful. Why can't you just keep quiet and accept it? But, and that's, he just said two words to her. quack, quack. She'd forgotten the story, you know, she'd forgotten the story, he remembered it. And as soon as she remembered it, she realised what a great guy that was. He's not going to argue and just, you know, spoil the beautiful love and happiness together. It's not worth it. So she stopped arguing too.
Yeah.
Not worth it, is it? So chicken and ducks.
Wow.
But it's a chicken! But it's a duck! Most of the time, you know, when it's like in marriage, always argue over the small things. The big things you can usually sort of sit down and agree on, talk it over with, but waste so much time on small stuff. Ain't worth it. Okay, there we go. That is 5:30. So that went fast. Okay.
Good night, joke.
Joke. Okay, more to come. A new joke book. Okay, you know about the duck who went into the pub? He waddled into the pub and said, glass of beer, please. No, really, clear Australian. So he gave him a glass of beer, he took out some money, gave it to the bartender, downed the beer and just waddled out again. The next day, the duck was back again. Just the bartender couldn't believe this. Waddled up to the bar, glass of beer, please, and paid his money, drank the beer down, waddled away again. And after the third day, this was really strange. So it happened the next day, after the third day, there was a circus in town. So the barman managed to find the boss of the circus and said, look, it's a duck. You wouldn't believe this. It's a duck who walks into my bar every afternoon, about 5 o'clock, has a glass of beer, pays, and goes away, and he speaks perfect English. And the circus master said, well, we can use a duck like this. People pay a lot of money to see a talking duck. So he said, yeah, here's my card. Tell him to come and see me. Next day, the duck waddles in. Glass of beer. Here's some money. And the barber said, look, I can get a job for you. The circus in town. So I think I can get you a job at the circus. And the duck says, what does a circus need with a bricklayer? You've heard it before, yeah. She hasn't though, she's always.